Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
conference brought to you by Your Remedies in the Law, which is in direct affiliation with Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer. Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you are on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very politely ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone joining this call looking for legal advice has no place or business here. Nobody here at Your Remedies in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. If you require legal advice, my advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes. It's just folks saying what they might do where they're similarly situated to you. You might get a little bit of education out of it, but mainly you're just going to get folks' opinions about what they might do. However educated and experienced these thoughts and opinions might be, they are just people's opinions nonetheless, and it's always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. I'd like to go over a few things here with Your Remedies in the Law, if I could, very quickly. First of all, if I can take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremediesinthelaw.com. If we look up in the upper right-hand corner, we see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and you'll have a separate page come up with just two items on it. These two items are of much importance, though, especially if this is all new to you. First and most importantly on the left is the jurisdictionary course. This is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure. Better known to some as American jurisprudence or AMJUR, the rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic understanding of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, mostly known for its high national win rate in most traffic cases throughout the country. At least that's what it's most popularly acquired for. But that is not really why it's on this page. The reason that we have it up here with the jurisdictionary course is when you go through it, you'll notice that it utilizes a lot of the same fundamental procedures that you learned about in the jurisdictionary course. So it kind of acts as a real-life homework assignment. Also, for a lot of folks, it's their first time committing to action. Folks seem a little more willing to take that first step, probably because of such a high success rate and traffic scenarios being such a common interest in this country today. The common law default, although known majorly for traffic purposes, has many other. Truly, it's for most scenarios that you may find yourself in where there's no damage to property or person. It's just some entity is claiming you broke a rule, therefore you must pay a civil penalty. Both of these items are very affordably priced. The jurisdictionary with a contribution of $250 and the common law default at $150. Also on the subject of Your Remedies in the Law, most of you are probably familiar now with Americans Restoring America. Every time you visit the homepage of yourremediesinthelaw.com, you are met with that blue box that pops up asking if you'd like to continue on to the site that you were visiting or stay and visit Americans Restoring America. The reason that we've done this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. There are multiple information providers talking about multiple subjects, as well as many other features and study groups at Your Remedies in the Law. And Your Remedies in the Law is just one of a couple dozen websites that all together make up Americans Restoring America. So there's quite a bit for you to see, and we hope that you'll do just that at your leisure. If you have any questions about whether or not we have an information provider that could give you their personal educated opinion about your particular situation, get a hold of us at yourremediesinthelaw.com, and we'll be happy to assist you in any way that we can. Statewide communications. If you're not already a member, please do sign up. Tell your friends and family about it. That's that map of the United States that you see on virtually every site that we have. It's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict, pre-decided topics of discussion. So essentially how it works is this. A wizard will walk you through a very easy setup. You know, put your name in here, click next. Put your zip code in here, click next, that sort of thing. Then it will walk you through the remainder of the setup. and then you get to a point where it will ask you what are your hot points interested in. This could range anything from credit card issues, home foreclosure, IRS matters, asset protection, or maybe veterans' rights, maybe personal health rights, anything that you can think of. And if it affects your personal rights, you should find it in that list or something that's close enough. When the setup is complete, it puts it all together, much of what you think of a social network. Though nothing like a social network. It's very custom. It's very private. But it then puts you in contact with people in your local area that have similar interests to you. The idea here is to put the power of education and communication back in the hands of the common man. If you are in need of legal advice or you need someone to represent you, you're going to have to get an attorney. It's just that simple. But if there was a way, a private place that you could go to discuss matters, your personal opinions, their personal opinions, with people that were like-minded, maybe you jump online one day and you say, this happened to me today. First person comes back and says, well, I disagree with that. I don't think that they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. Well, that's probably not going to be a tremendous amount of help to you. Maybe the next person comes on and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do were I similarly situated. I'd watch these YouTube videos, and then I'd go down there to my local county courthouse, go to the law library, get a law dictionary, and look at these terms. Maybe the next person after that says, those all sound like great ideas. I'd also go to this particular website and check out these educational materials that might assist you in your learning. And then for you to go and do some due diligence on what you're reading, just people's suggestions, people's opinions at all. But if you did some due diligence and educated yourself, maybe the farther you got into it, you discovered that it's not as difficult as you initially thought it would be because you're focused on one single subject. And you get to the point where you've educated yourself, and now you're handling your own affairs, your own matters. Well, folks, there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that. And that's all we're trying to do here at Statewide Communications is just very simply get people start talking again. Of course, there's no cost to you for using Statewide Communications, either signing up or the regular using of it. And so we hope that you'll pass that around. Freedoms Radio. If you're over the road, you don't want to deal with the call process, and you're just new to your remedies in the law, and you don't yet have your username and password, therefore you can't see the phone number and the PIN. By the way, if you'd like to pick up a membership to your remedies in the law, it's very easy. You just simply click the register button. Fill out your basic information there. You'll enjoy the first 30 days for free to evaluate it. After that, it converts to a very affordable $10 a month on your credit card or your PayPal. But every single call is recorded. You have years of archives to go through, a vast wealth of knowledge, as well as many other wonderful features. But if that's not an option for you today, you have freedomsradio.com. Every night, the calls go out over the air at 9 p.m. Eastern live. There's also the question bar there where you can type in a question, click submit. As long as that's during call hours, that will pop up on the moderator screen, and we do our best to read every single one of those questions out over the air, so long as they are appropriate. So you don't get them one-on-one with the information provider like you would be by being a private member, but you do get your questions answered. There's no cost to utilize Freedoms Radio, so no matter where you are or your circumstances, you never have to miss a call again if you don't wish. All right, winding down here, I'd like to go over one last bit of housekeeping. This is your caveat emptor, or your buyer beware. For any purchase that you may make, if your remedy is in the law or any of the other sites underneath the umbrella of Americans Restoring America, when you come aboard and you go with an information provider, you are doing just that. Information providers pay Mr. Edward for advertising at your remedy is in the law. This payment would be an expense to that information provider along with any other expenses that they might have associated with your particular product or service. When you contact us, all we simply do is listen to your particular scenario, quickly deduce from a list of folks that honestly most of you would probably never be able to find on your own just simply because they can't be found. Can we make those introductions? Not every part on the information provider is always going to be successful. Everybody always hopes for the best. We plan for the best, and believe you me, we aim for the best. But unavoidable things do sometimes happen, and when they do, you have to roll with them and deal with them as you would with anything else in life. But we also want to emphasize, though, that the intent is always to be successful. If you have welcome you to visit www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com/testimonials and see what others have to say about these products and services. Now, let's touch very quickly on the subject of refunds or the refund policy. There is none. Not if the remedy is in the law, anyway. Of course, when you call board and you go with a particular information provider, again, that is exactly what you're doing. So any discussion of a refund or a credit would be a strict and private matter between you and the information provider, and even then, that's very few and far between. It must be extenuating circumstances. You are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular process or information provider's time. All right, lastly, pertaining here to all of the information providers at Your Remedy is in the Law, we'd like you to remind everybody that all of our speakers at these conferences are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always be civil. Besides, if a question is posed properly and then answered properly, then we can all learn something from it.
Well, Martin, thank you for your ramble. We appreciate that disclaimer. Ladies and gentlemen, there are several people on the call that are here first time. I'll do some housekeeping when I'm through with this particular part here and ask for your first name only so that I can just connect your phone number to my records. Otherwise, I'll just make up a name, and I don't want to do that. The second thing is that there are people here on the call tonight that are not new, but they've been here before, but they didn't receive my text where I had invited them specifically for this call tonight. So for those of you here for that, last week you were introduced to Fee Simple with regards to receiving land in your name or the name of your charitable religious trust. When your property is under the jurisdiction of the United States, that's a unique quote. Holding land fee simple means you have the absolute highest level of ownership available to you through the United States. And it's granting you nearly complete control over the property. It's allowing you to use, to sell, to lease, or to pass it on to your heirs without any significant restrictions, essentially giving you full rights to the land so long as you follow local zoning laws and regulations and pay your taxes, property taxes. It's considered the most complete form of property ownership in real estate available to you under the jurisdiction of the United States. Let me say clearly that real estate is one thing, land is another thing. Last week we also discussed how much that has been learned over the past few years regarding this subject. And for those of you who have already put their land into a trust, a charitable religious trust, this call is of most importance to you, for you to attend to as changes have been made and discoveries have been found to make your title even better. This week's conference call is a most important continuation of that teaching. After you spent several hours, after having spent several hours with Justice Beshear, Brother John, you don't want to miss what he has to say on this matter. So without further ado, it's my pleasure to turn this call over to Brother John.
Thank you for that, Michael. Thank you for that kind and very gracious introduction. As Michael was saying, the technology of law continues to grow and increase, and we are learning some things that are just amazing on how to do better at what we do. And what's happening is that there's a lot of changes out there. And something that a lot of people don't realize is that many states have a lot of laws regarding how to transfer a title, what goes into this type of deed or that type of deed. And the state of California is one of the most restrictive and constrictive states in the union when it comes to transferring title. And some of you have heard the jokes about California legislators that they they're out there to make your life miserable. But don't worry, it's much worse than you think. At this juncture, some of the laws that they've come up with are just abominable. But there's one group of people out there, commercial group, that's even worse than California legislators. And that, a lot of people misconnote this group with the title companies, but they're actually the ones that provide and underwrite the title insurance. And what happens is that an individual who wants title insurance is at the mercy of whatever the title insurance company would like to offer or approve or disprove. And there's been some horror stories where a title company, with one of our students, the title company was working with us the best and absolute hardest they possibly could. But the title insurance company, they wrangled this person around so bad that not just the student was hurt and injured, but the student ended up losing his property, and some of our team tried to help them out financially and lost what they were investing to try to help this student. And so what's happened is that we've learned some horribly brutal lessons that just you can't begin to imagine how unkind some of this really is. To that end, we've been working at trying to figure out a way to get past this and deal with this. And so at this juncture, we're going to start to share with you some of the lessons that we've learned and some of the lessons that we've learned the hard way. And to that end, what happens is that for those of you who are familiar with title insurance and some of the caveats and quid pro quos and the wherewithal that is required to get title insurance, you know, some of you have already learned the hard way that many of the title insurance companies that are out there have an unbelievably strong authority, and they almost litigate or legislate your capacity to work with your title. And they can make, break, or sink a deal when you when your purchaser is looking for title insurance. And right now, with things that we've just learned literally in the past 6 to 8 weeks, we're working with a couple of our students right now to get past some pitfalls and landfalls that, man, some landmines that they've been dealing with this whole way along. And what I've learned by spending, and I spent some very, very serious time right now with some of the title companies that we're working with our students. And I had the honor and the privilege of actually having a couple of title insurance employees share with me some challenges that they've been dealing with this whole way without restraint. This one was one title company. They held a 3.5-hour conference call with me recently over how to get past some of the really brutal title insurance issues. And to that end, when you are not just purchasing a property or trying to sell it, there's a whole bunch of landmines that you need to watch out for. And presently,
among all of these landmines, I'm in the process of rewriting some of the deeds and warranty deeds and things that we've gone through that used to, it used to be that, you know, when you, especially when you are working with Justice Beshears, putting your property into your corporation sole or your charitable religious trust, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, everything was straightforward. Well, we're finding out that there are some abominable landmines to be stepped on, and that things that we didn't have a clue of just 3 years ago or 2 years ago, and I, a piece of property that I personally was involved in the transactions, I learned some things that I had no idea. You know, that, you know, you've heard me use the term, don't worry, it's much worse than you think. Well, that applies. And to this, starting now and moving forward, I am no longer recommending under any circumstances that individuals use quitclaim deeds for any transferring having to do with their charitable religious trust or their corpse soul. And there's, we're recommending that now warranty deed or general warranty deed or in rare occasions special warranty deed. And we're going to, you know, and some, you know, some of you will say, well, John, you just mentioned a whole bunch of different kinds of deeds. Where are you going with all that? Well, that's a good question. I'm glad you asked. And tonight we're going to explore a handful of the options and opportunities that you have, the vehicles where which you can transfer the title on your property to someone else or your CRT so that you can avoid these pitfalls and landmines. And I'm going to be very honest with you. Almost all of them can be, these pitfalls and landmines can be traced back to the title company. And to that end, you absolutely do not want to be held hostage by the, well, actually, you trace them back to the title company, but it goes back one step farther. It's the underwriter for the title insurance for the title company that you really want to work with and make certain that no matter how you slice it, that you cross the T's and dot the I's in advance. If you have not done the pre-preparation, and you all of a sudden find yourself in the mix, in the mess, I've only found one title company so far that somebody, a good friend of mine that had transferred title many, you purchased something that was years and years earlier, and all of a sudden they you found out that they the title was locked up and they couldn't, there wasn't a thing that they could do about it, and he almost lost everything. It still cost him, it cost him pretty bad. He almost lost the house and the equity that he had in it, and it was just unbelievably abominable. They, and so right now, what happens is that we're going to explain ABC, what's happening with that. And insurance is just that. It's you're buying somebody else's bond or protection against something going wrong, you know, like your car insurance in case somebody hits you, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, so that in the event that there is a loss, that you've got somebody to cover a catastrophic economic event that could be more than you can handle fiscally and potentially put you in the poorhouse. And the same thing is true with title insurance. when you are purchasing title insurance, you're purchasing protection against somebody making a claim against your title. And to that end, meaning that somebody had a car accident 25 years ago, and they wandered off the roadway up into your front yard and then hit someone else in your front yard, and it was on your property. And I'm actually speaking from a true-to-life event that occurred, and actually it was 26 years later that they realized that there was a lien against their property. They didn't have a clue what had happened, but in the car accident, the person that was physically injured was admitted to a hospital. They and she was broken leg, broken arm. Things were not that good. Things were actually kind of serious, and the hospital, without them realizing, put a lien on that person's. They in court, they went after the individual that had the vehicle, but what happened was is that they also looked up the property and the property owner, and this little girl was in the sidewalk in the front of the property, and she was carried up into the property. It was not a good situation, but what happened was that the hospital, the attorneys for the hospital at the time, put a lien on the house for the unpaid emergency room fees and doctors and everything else. The little girl was later admitted to the hospital, and the car insurance that was at the time from the driver that hit only covered $35,000 worth of bodily injury. And so what happened was that this hospital bill that was over $300,000, they one of their accountants later came back and got with one of their attorneys and went and reviewing that the original case, which was 26 years earlier, they went and filed a lien against the actually what happened was is the lien that had been filed, they updated it, and the house had changed owners twice. And so what happened was is the lien was against the property. And I didn't realize how intense this was. I had something that happened to me personally was that somebody, they were part of a bump and rob scam or bump and sue scam. They hit me. And I didn't know that hospitals and insurance companies for the hospitals could put a lien against your property. And all of a sudden, there was an unassuming little envelope that looked just like junk mail. In fact, originally, my wife said, oh, that's just junk mail, and proceeded to get ready to toss it. She threw it in the pile to go to the trash. And I later pulled that out and looked at it, and it was holy kitty litter, Batman. There was a lien against our property. What happened was is that this gentleman, he sued our insurance company for damage to the vehicle. He was an uninsured motorist. He hit us, rammed us from the rear, said that we did an illegal lane change, and in court, that was overturned and lost. But see, that was almost a year after the year and a half after the accident, or the event. And what happened was that I found out almost 2 years later that there was a lien, that the hospital where he was initially seen, he was uninsured. He was an uninsured motorist, didn't have medical insurance, was fraining that a bunch of back injuries and everything else. And we got that lawsuit stopped and got it overturned. But the hospital, they had still placed a lien against our property and didn't turn it into the insurance company. They didn't have any of the insurance company information. They only had our name. They got it from this guy. And the lien was serious. It was for some serious hospital bills. Okay. The one I was telling you about, the 26, actually it was just about almost 26 and a half years. Two owners later, what happened was that the hospital, I mentioned the accountants, they had gotten with the their legal department, and their legal department originally had filed a lien against the property, but it was not properly recorded, and there was two digits in the PIN, the property identification number, that were in error. Well, they corrected it, and all of a sudden this showed up, and it's over $300,000. Okay, and so what happened was is that insurance companies, you know, and right now we've all seen that in California, there were insurance companies that sent letters of cancellation, their notice, to whole neighborhoods of people that were insured by them that were in the path of some of those California wildfires a couple of weeks ago. Well, since then, most of those have been struck down in court. But they, what's happened is that one insurance company, they canceled a whole bunch of individuals that they rate that in their investigators rated them in high risk areas for forest fires or wildfires, and so the people didn't have any say so, etc. Things were canceled, and the governor of the state stood beside the insurance company's claim, you know, and so there are a lot of individuals that their houses weren't in the path, but were potentially suspected, have lost their insurance now. So what you got to remember, the insurance companies, they're not dummies, they're entrepreneurs, and they're out to make an extra nickel. And the better that insurance investigator, that attorney that works for them, does his job and creates some solution to save them some money or make them some money, they look good in their employer's eyes. Well, in this case, title insurance, the one for 26 and a half years later, that one is actually still in litigation. It's been in litigation for 4.5 years now, there because the people that currently live there had nothing to do with it at all, and they've tried to sell the property. They can't. The new buyer, and this is where they found out how serious it was. They found out that the new prospective buyer, their title company, found this lien and refused to insure the property because of that lien. They went to six other title companies, including two of them that are Lloyd's of London is the underwriter, and they refused to give them title insurance. And so what's happened is that they are now stuck with the property, and they are having very, very serious trouble. They have to move. They have to liquidate this thing. And if they don't get at least some of their money back out of it shortly, they will be filing Chapter 11 bankruptcy because it's that serious. And so what's happened is that we had one of our students that the property back then, which was the simplest and most economic and could be even considered the wise approach was a quit claim deed. And all the quit claim deed was transfer the property, transfer your interest into somebody, to someone else. And but what's happening is that, and this is what's brutally, brutally critical, is that when you're transferring your property, especially if you're putting it into like a charitable religious trust or a corp sol, which are non-statutory trust and corporations, they what happens is that title companies already and title insurance companies already have some challenges with those type of transactions. Presently, a general warranty deed, what it does is that the seller is promising that the seller owns the property 100% and there's no liens or encumbrances affecting that property except for the items listed in the deed. You're warranting the title, and the seller promises that he will defend the title on a warranty deed, they're holding harmless the buyer if something arose that was on their watch. Okay, now with a general warranty deed, if problems arise later, the impact of the title, the ownership of the property that were not listed in the deed, the seller, if the seller has breached the warranty, they may be sued regardless of the problem. The thing is that that's unique to the general warranty deed. Now, a special warranty deed, that if a problem arises after the deed was signed, that affects the title or ownership of the property, it was not listed in the exceptions of the title of the deed, then the seller, and if the seller has breached the warranty, he may be sued by the buyer only if the problem arises buyer through under the seller. That's one thing that if the seller can prove that he had no cognizance of something that was pre-existing before that, then they're not liable and they can't be sued. But how much time do you spend in court before that determination is made? It is brutally critical. So a special warranty deed is often used by sellers to limit their liability. Generally, sellers don't have to sign general warranty deeds. But the special warranty deed is commonly used by builders and banks when they're transferring property. In both of those cases, it's new property or a fresh development. And it's good to know that the title insurance is just like any other insurance. It covers most problems, but not every problem. So it's very important that you review your title insurance when you're working with these type of issues. It'll have a standard list of exceptions in the coverage, just like your regular car insurance does, or your et cetera, et cetera. Things like a tax sale deed or tax lien sale, the deed will transfer the property without any warranties. Make a note of that. And it is used when the owner fails to pay property taxes owed on the property, and it's usually sold at public auction at the courthouse steps, and it's usually called a tax sale. Another type of deed is a sheriff's deed. It also transfers the ownership, but it's without any warranties, and it's usually at a public auction called a sheriff's sale, and that almost always takes place at the courthouse steps. Now, let's presuppose that each and every one of you is now a title insurance company, and you're the owner, okay? Now, if all of a sudden you're doing a title search and you're going over the warranty or the deeds, and all of a sudden you find a quitclaim deed, which there's no warranties, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's without exception, without any warranties, a quick claim deed. Now, if you find a deed that has an as-is clause to the property condition, in other words, the condition of the structures and the land or as-is clause, the seller may be telling the buyer that if something breaks, don't call me. That the property is sold as is, physical condition of the property. Seller is making no promises to fix anything. But keep in mind that legal exception to the enforceability of the as is clause, if the buyer can prove that that fraud was involved, then the as is provision does not apply. So now you, as a title insurance provider, there's three types of transactions, one that have a full warranty, one that have a limited warranty, and one that have no warranty. And, ones that have, like, as-is or quitclaim deeds have no warranty. How interested are you going to be in possibly underwriting the title insurance for that transaction? Exactly. My feelings exactly also. I'm not interested. I don't want to create unnecessary liability, threat, or visibility to me and my company, okay, or you and your company. So it's going to be hard to sell that property that has those type of deeds that have no warranty. Now, if you have a deed three transactions back, there was a limited warranty. You, as a title insurance individual, may consider that, wait a minute, there could be something systemic hiding in the back there that we don't want to risk being involved in. And so to that end, your title company, you may decide not to underwrite this one. Well, that one doesn't appear to be a big threat. You can go through a couple of title insurance companies, and I'll tell you right now that going through leapfrogging from lily pad to lily pad, title insurance provider to title insurance provider, the minimum leap is 14 to 21 days, and sometimes can take as much as 90 days. Before that title insurance company decides, well, we don't want to cover this. And we had one student that went to 8 title companies before I was introduced to him and before we got to the title provider. 5 exchanges before this one, the gentleman tried to make an arrangement with an individual that provided services to reduce your taxes and your potential outstanding loan value. And to do so, he had to transact the title into that entity's name. And then later on, when the process was supposed to be done, they transacted it back, okay? Both of them were quitclaim deeds. Oh, but wait a minute. The reason he got the property back right away was because that provider didn't carry through, didn't do diddly, took his $12,000 and did not provide a cent of coverage. And he had to threaten the individual with criminal prosecution to get the title back. And even then, that was still only done in court. All the court did was return the title, and they voided the original quitclaim deeds, but they were still on the title history. Then this gentleman, a year and a half later, found another provider of that kind of service who also demanded that a stipulation was that it be transferred into their entity so they could do the negotiations with justiciable standing. And justiciable standing means that
you, before the law, you have the correct standing or correct interest in what's happening to be able to file whatever pleadings or complaint or whatever that you're considering or recording. And it's like when somebody steps on your foot and you broke a toe, well, you have justiciable standing to file against, you've been wronged, and you're the person, there's been a wrong done, and you're the person that was wronged, so you know the people that you can go after, you've got their identification, you have justiciable standing. Well, to do that, they have to have justiciable standing for the type of service they are providing. This one, while threatening to be successful for over 2.5 years, never did. And the gentleman filed a complaint against this individual who had a real estate license in the state of California, and the gentleman signed a quitclaim deed returning the property to this person that would later become the student that that I was working with. I saw that deed myself. I did a complete search, pulled up every, got them all, you know, soup to nuts from the time of Moses before he crossed the Red Sea to current. And I saw that one, and there's a little known law in California that because California has a joint property state, the wife also has to sign the quitclaim deed, or a spousal quitclaim deed. And there are specific laws regarding that in the state of California. Well, this gentleman, unbeknownst to a lot of individuals, knew that. And so what he was doing was threatening to provide a service that he had no idea how to truly, and had never, ever, ever been successful on anybody else's property. He only was successful one time on his own property. And he used that kind of as a poster child. In fact, he went to Las Vegas, Nevada, opened up a booth at a real estate convention, and was offering his case study of his property without giving all the details, using his wife's maiden name on the property, and it was on there tell people, hey, look. And he even did a 2-hour and 30-minute class on what and how he was doing it, et cetera, but without truly explaining what he was doing. He didn't actually know how to do it. There's a handful of things that were missing. But what was happening was that a whole bunch of people signed up. And one of the ladies, she was a single girl. She was taking care of her aged grandmother. And her sister and their three children were living in this house. And the lien was getting so bad that she went and paid $19,000, which was everything she had, to this gentleman. And then she quit claiming the deed over. And when, after 2.5 years, he volunteered to her that, I can't, you know, you've got too many problems in your history, this and that, but would not give her $19,000 back. Not right away. He later sent, five of the 19 back. Okay. 5.5 years later, John's doing some research and come across this lady's property as one of the ones that were transacted. Checks with her. Oh, everything, you know, I'm in trouble, but they're foreclosing right now. And we had a buyer that was an angel investor, actually, that was willing to buy the property. And and then... redo the mortgage and
This gentleman and his wife were ready to carry Maria's, this lady. I try not to use names, but they were going to carry her note. But they wanted title insurance. Okay, I had already found out that she was one of these individuals. And this gentleman says, I quit claimed it back. Well, there was no California spousal quit deed filed on it. And the wife, holy kitty litter, Batman, she was a tough cookie to deal with. She was immovable. She would not, your husband already signed it, and she wanted $110,000 to sign that. This lady, Maria, did not have that. And I was working on her case pro bono to help somebody else out to get information to help our student, okay? And what happened was that she lost the house. They foreclosed. The bank foreclosed. Now, the bank has not been able to liquidate the property in over a year. And I almost feel like asking Michael how long it's been, but a year and two or a year and 3 months, the bank that foreclosed has not been able to liquidate the property. Maria doesn't have any recourse to get the property back, even though we've now figured out everything that happened with it. And what happened was is that the bank can't get rid of it because nobody will underwrite the title insurance. And without that, by the way, that unkind deceiver gentleman, his spouse is now asking for $210,000 against a house that's currently valued at 1.3, and she's asking more and more all the time. Well, if you can cover me with this, then I'll go ahead and sign that. And I've spoken with the sheriff of that county. I've talked to the California Realtor Board. I was out there and I met with the state's attorneys. To try to see what we could do about getting this corrected. Finally, we had other students, and then turns out our student and somebody. I'm not saying anything or admitting anything on this, and somebody found out where his wife had her hair done and everything. After three tries, got the booth right next to her hair dryer, and was drying and they were chit-chatting, and says, "Wait a minute, do I know you? Your name sounds familiar. Is this your husband?" And she was dead shocked. And he says, "Do you realize that there are people that are looking to kill you because of your, your husband has put you at horrible risk? That you realize he's holding this one for over $500,000, your signature." And she says, "Well, what does that got to do?" He says, "The people don't have that money, and to them, it's cheaper to pay somebody from New York $50,000 to erase you. And under the California law, then you no longer, they no longer have a standing to withhold, and the title is now clear because he is now an unmarried man." Well, it was 12 days, and four people got California spousal quit deeds in the mail, and she divorced him and moved to parts unknown. Okay, but that was not before our student. We finally got this one resolved, but there was other damages done, and we went back and found that there were other quit claim deeds, and I went through an armload of title companies trying to get this corrected, and what happened was that we finally got it corrected, but they were foreclosing, and the title company drug their feet, and we could have closed a whole bunch of times, and they didn't, and the title company was so upset about what was happening, and we even went to court over it. He went to court over it, and filed three times. We hired California attorneys to go plead the case. The attorney said, "Oh, no problem. We got this covered." And no way. He couldn't get anything. So what's happening is that we've now realized that there are some situation where one of our students, they transacted something into, they moved it from one CRT to another without title insurance. What's happened is they moved it twice. And now I checked with the original title company in Nevada, and they says, "No, we saw that happen too." And I says, "Wait a minute, you guys agreed and promised that once it was transferred, the title insurance would apply to that." "Oh no, not now. It's not going to happen." And so what's happening is that we're preparing a process. Actually, I'm working on two of them right now, with which we go back and correct all the title transfers that we can, as far back as we can. And I'll read you one of the. I've got it in front of me here, and it says, "Hold on, let's see here." I'm going to read you some of the. "This affidavit is made to induce subsequent title insurer to insure titles or the real property described here in item one above. A client agrees to indemnify in bold title insurer and hold it harmless from any loss or damage resulting from the reliance on the matter set forth in the affidavit." Okay. This is one of four documents. This is a single line in how many pages of that document and this is one of four documents that we're putting together the whole package to be able to, and we have to address all the details as best we can. And we're finding out that, and I've already run with that 3.5-hour meeting that we just had, I run it past that title company and all four of their attorneys. And now I've run it past two other title companies and their underwriters, and I've run it past one provider with Lloyd's. And they says, "Well, if that's the case, then they said if it wasn't a charitable religious trust, because there's protections that a charitable religious trust offers that no other entity offers, or a corp soul. There's no other entity like a corp soul or charitable religious trust, these non-statutory entities, they protection. But we're not comfortable. But that one, the wording you've got now and the path you're going and the process that you're taking, we could cover that." And a transaction that just occurred less than a year ago of a property that I used to own, I went back and I found the quit claim deeds and the individuals who authored them, and got all of that corrected for this individual who purchased it from a friend of mine. It was a property that I owned at one time, and all of a sudden the title company was completely happy with it and comfortable with it. Now, I'm not going to say that things are going to change again tomorrow and that the title companies are going to develop new policies. That the fact that you're being successful like at security means that you're running like a tortured slave in a 440 relay race, and to stay ahead of all the other individuals. And the fact that you're winning means like you're running like a tortured slave. But if you stop for 1 second, throw up your hand and say, "Look, guys, I'm winning," whoosh, all your competitors blow right past you. We are realizing that when there's a quitclaim deed or certain types of deeds involved, and the thing is, because there's such a variety of these deeds that are available and the clauses that are in them, that we are finding out that we need to go back to the last time that this entity or this property was insured and had title insurance against it, so that we can have an unbroken chain of comfort for the title company that might handle a future transaction. And now we're finding out that I have friends that have statutory trusts and non-statutory trusts. The best non-statutory trusts that I know of are Justice Beshear's. In fact, every time we learn something, and Justice Beshear's and I, not only yesterday, but today, we had a very, very long conference call and on how to transfer entities that and he's currently looking at the possibility of stopping three transactions mid-transaction right now and going with this new technology, this rewrite, and so that we make certain that he serves, that we serve you, the people we serve properly. And every time something comes up that we learn that's new, like this particular class and conference call tonight, we try to bring it to everybody's attention as quickly as possible. There is a teensy-weensy bit of work involved in each one of these transactions. It takes me between 26 and 38 hours worth of work to go through and get it to the place where the Lloyds, the attorney for Lloyds and the underwriter, the two underwriters that we were meeting with, would finally say, John, we're comfortable with this. And if and we know what's going into a charitable religious trust, the individual that is getting ready to transfer it into his charitable religious trust, he's getting ready to hire Justice Beshear's to create the entities. He hasn't yet, but he's getting ready to the moment he puts the funds together. That's something that they said they would cover. And we're realizing, and they, some of the title companies like, Old Federal Title, there's a handful of them that, we are finding out that they are refusing to cover anything, which means that, individuals that are potentially under a sale that is being made under stress or duress, that they may not be able to transfer in time to save their situation. As I told you, that one student that we had, it was a 3.5 year running gun battle with the title company and the underwriters. And in the end, this one person that got offended by somebody, and an attorney in California, Central California, that was involved with a previous bankruptcy that involved that property. The judge remembers how wonderful she was treated, and the judge put a denied with prejudice order on that, so that that property was lost. Now, as I said, the bank that foreclosed now has zero capacity to, they're not able to sell it. It's been to the courthouse steps three times and returned three times to the bank because they couldn't get the title insurance that they wanted to, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They don't know that we have come up with a solution that one of their two underwriters is Lloyd's of London. And I've spoken with the gentleman that turned them down previously, and he said that he would now. I didn't tell him that I knew that he was with them, and that at the time they were underwriting Old Republic Title in California, and I didn't tell him that I had anything to do or knowledge of that particular property or transaction. The one I showed him on the table was from Orange, Florida, Orange County, Florida, and I went over, et cetera, ABC, and they said that they would cover it. That was my case study for them. And for those of you who now have properties that are in charitable religious trusts or corpse souls, and you want to increase your protection, you need to touch base with Michael and find out, you know, what it's going to work with. Now, I'm telling you right now, I can only do about, so far, am the only one that's been successful at this, and I'm trying to get ready to train another student. I'm going to try to, and one of our other information providers to help me on these so I can reduce these times and maybe apprentice them up into being able to handle so that all I have to do is do the final eyes on it. But right now, it's not something that's easy, but we've figured out a way that to further bomb-proof your property and the protection that you have and the provisions that you've already carried a far distance, and we figured out how to further protect those that are doing new transactions like that. And this is something that we've just learned that's just come to the surface because what we found out was that Old Republic Title, they referred to two people that used to work for two other title companies that are now looking at title transactions and making recommendations on the title insurance to individuals. And they're saying that these guys were doing over there. We found out that they found these potential faults with the quitclaim deeds or the other special warranty deeds, et cetera, and all the different types of deeds that are out there. They start looking, you know, when they're doing the title search and the research, they're finding these potential challenges and flagging them and suggesting that some of them they don't want to have anything to do with anymore. And so selling the property becomes now a genuine real challenge. And so what we need to do is relook at each transaction and then create an indemnification or a correction to if there is a challenge hiding in the wings. And like I said, that one in California, we finally got that those transactions that were on that one for our student, finally got them taken care of. That student still lost their property because there was not one, not two, but three other things wrong with it that and we're still hoping to save that one, actually. Well, I don't know if we're going to be able to resave that particular property, but we're shooting at getting the damages from the parties that actually were responsible for the other two of the other challenges, that the reason why the property didn't get sold and why they refused to. We had 12 minutes remaining before it was going to the sheriff's sale to rescue that property, and the lady involved decided to go to lunch at 9:48 in the morning. She just decided she was going to walk away from her desk. So that's how much power a non-statutory entity like an insurance underwriter can exert in a transaction. To that end, we've spoken with the attorneys from Lloyd's and Old Republic, all with different examples, and found out that there is ways to deal with that. So at this time, I've gone horribly over on my time. My humble apologies. If you have a property that you think may have been transacted in a way that could constitute a problem for you to be able to transact, I'll tell you this. Had I known this, there's a widow that I would have taken under my wing, and I was working her case pro bono. She was a student, and I could have saved a situation that the title company, the underwriter, would have taken care of her, and she'd been out of harm's way a long time ago and possibly even had her property free and clear. there's some other things that we wend into the that we're prepared to wend into these contractual agreements and the transactions. But if you are concerned at all that either the property you're owning or that you have owned or that you're considering purchasing, talk with Michael and take it from there. With that, we're going to turn it over to Q&A, and if you can remain on the subject matter topic, that's wonderful. If you like last week, we had one person who waited to the end so that he wouldn't disturb anybody that was that had subject matter questions. That's very kind of you if you consider doing that. And with that, Michael, back to you.
Well, thank you so very, very much. Appreciate that. It's a great call tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, I believe you know the routine. We have a new caller here from Poughkeepsie, New York. I'm going to give you a text in just a moment to share with me some of your contact information, if you would. Press star 2 on your keypad, ladies and gentlemen. Press star 2 on your keypad to raise your hand. First comes up Charlie here right away. For those of you listening on Freedoms Radio, simply look to the center right of your monitor. You'll see the silhouette of a rectangle laying on its side. It's empty. Left-click inside of it. Type away your comment or question. Outside that rectangle, underneath, you'll see a place to put your name, some other requested information, and hit submit. When you hit submit, your question or comment pops up on my end, and I'm happy to lend my voice to your comment or question. So we'll start with Dr. Charlie. Go right ahead, buddy.
Yes, thank you very much. Apparently, there's not. I don't know that I need to understand this, but I'm assuming it appears that there must be some capacity of a CRT, for example, or maybe other non-statutory trust to prevail in some of these situations that versus a statutory trust. That'd be one question. And of course, the other, I don't know if I need to talk with Michael. I mean, I do have some property in a CRT, but I don't know that there's an issue, or I don't know if I need to research it, or I don't know if you have any guidance or, you know, questions that I might ask that how to know if I need some consultation on this issue.
Good question, Dr. Charles. Once again, it's an honor and privilege to have you on the call. Thanks for joining us. How many CRTs do you currently have property being held in?
One.
Okay. Excellent. How long have you had the CRT?
No more than 2 years.
Do you remember? Well, that's not critical right now. Do you remember how you transferred it, or how the property was conveyed to the charitable religious trust?
Well, at purchase, the trust purchased the property. I don't know if that answers the question.
Okay. So it went through a regular title company?
It did.
Did you have title insurance on that transaction?
I do know there was title insurance because there was I had questions of why is there this, you know, this lien? It was what would you call it? Gas lines or some sort of
easement?
You know, easement. Thank you. And it didn't seem that it maybe was in a previous deed or something. I remember I had some questions about it, but it didn't matter. I wasn't going to get the sale without the easements being, excluded or something like that. If that makes sense.
Okay. You brought up a good point, Charles. The easements, especially for utilities that could present a hazard. Now, easements they're in appurtenances such as those. Once they're recorded, they actually constitute a deed unto themselves. The fact that easements are listed in other deeds, the actual property deed, is a courtesy. The fact that you sold off the mineral rights back in 1871, and that your son sold off some of the water rights in 1784, those deeds are deeds, and they're not required to reference them. Title companies, that's one of the things that they do very well, very, very well, is they find those types of conveyances and transferences that are not the aggregate soil on the surface, okay? And so it's not required to be, you're not required to see it in your deed. There is no law that requires that. Well, excuse me, there are 9 states that require it. Only 3 of those, it's a state law. The rest, 9, there's 9 states that have jurisdictions that require, counties that require that when a property is transferred, that if mineral rights or this or that have already been. And so in those jurisdictions that legally require that, they've done so for a very long time. The last time one of them that I know of was changed, the law was changed 91 years ago. That before that, they were always required to record it. So the chance that something is missing in a state or jurisdiction that requires it is slim. And at the same time, the title insurance will need to look at the title insurance that applies to your property, to this most recent transaction. And the thing that's very important, Charlie, is that by the way, Dr. Charles, how do you like to be referred to? Charles, Chuck, hey you, doctor, the handsome guy in the corner with the mustache?
I'll go with Good Time Charlie.
That works, Charlie? Just be sure and let me know when it's dinner time. Okay.
Yeah, I work for food. Yeah, just don't call me any you like, just not late for a meal.
That's right. You got
it. So, Good Time Charlie, what we need to do is either you need to have your attorneys or submit a copy to Michael for review of your title insurance so that we can confirm what your liability is. And see, the thing is that you've already got the property, and it's already in your trust, isn't it?
That is true.
So if all of a sudden we have a subsequent transaction, or all of a sudden you decide to move to Norway and somebody wants to buy that property from you before you move, then chances are 2 in 3 that they're going to want title insurance. So what it means is that this property needs to be prepared and capable of being acceptable in an underwriter's mind, and that is where the penny drops. You've heard that old saying, perception is 9/10, of reality.
Right.
The 10% fact sometimes has little or nothing to do with, when reality strikes, their perception, especially if it's somebody's perception that you're a threat to them, even though you're completely verifiably non-belligerent, they may still bop you over the head with that stick, thinking that they're defending themselves, but it's the title insurance underwriter's mind that we're going after. And this is something that, as cruelly painful as this sounds, this is something that I've learned that has to be addressed. And making certain that we take care of the perceptions in their minds, because I have seen already, like I said, we have one widow that I was doing her case pro bono, and we could have had her completely rescued a long time ago had we not had
a title insurance problem. They were ready to close. In fact, we had a closing date set up and everything else, and all of a sudden, the realtor that brought the buyer to the table, she says, "John, we've got a problem. We're having problems getting the title insurance." And a perfectly good rescue and defeat was snatched out of the jaws of victory. Literally, actually, you know what? I can't believe I said that. That literally, good time, Charlie, that literally describes what happened. I can't believe I said that. Wow. And that was, yeah. I've never said that before, you know, and I can't believe I said that. But, wow, that really applies. And now that I think about it, it's really that bad. And so either have your attorney or if you'd like, Michael has many, many, many information providers. And by the way, was the CRT prepared by Justice Breshears for you?
It was, yes.
Excellent. Okay. I can tell you right there, half or two-thirds or three-quarters of the potential landmines that could befall that type of transaction are not there. Justice Breshears, and on the conference call that he and I had today, I realized that so much of the legwork that is required is already intact with Justice Breshears' transaction. I am learning to love and respect that guy more and more every day. He's so incredibly humble, and the wisdom hides in his, you know, well, he's almost dumb as a fox, you know. He humbly prepares these entities, and they are so good and so sharp. And I've known Justice Breshears for quite a few years, for about 30 years, and we've gotten into some talked a lot of trash and treason and conspiracy about all kinds of ministry opportunities and how to help people that were in some strange, strange stuff, including citizenship issues and, et cetera, things that you almost couldn't imagine. I learned more about him that I appreciate every single day. Have either your attorneys or send an electronic copy to Michael or both. And I don't know how much your attorneys charge to look at some things like that. Some of them, you know, all the semi-decent attorneys are usually about $175 to $275 an hour. And it may take an hour or two, a couple hours to go over that. So, you know, just to do the evaluation. But confirm the coverage of your liability and ask the attorney, if you are the underwriter for the title company that I'm preparing, if I'm going to sell this and you're the underwriter or the attorney for the underwriter, would you go with this? Are you comfortable that the only verification and indemnification would have to occur from the date this title insurance was issued forward to now? And just ask them that question. Good time, Charlie.
Basically, the question I'm just writing down, if you, sir, ma'am, are the underwriter or the underwriter's attorney, would you approve this contract?
From the date that this title insurance was in effect, are you comfortable that it covers everything previous?
Okay, from the date of the, basically the sale of.
Yeah. So if the sale, if the sale was last Wednesday and today's Tuesday, are you comfortable, Mr. Underwriter, that this covers everything from Wednesday of last week previous, so that the only indemnification that I need to get from you is from Wednesday last week to today?
And now, Michael, if you've got other questions waiting, I can.
You can come back. Hey, it's Tonight was an odd night. I actually had surgery today, and you guys probably heard some of the commotion. I got somebody to race me home. I'm a little bit loopy and a little bit spooky here, but after surgery, something about the anesthesia, and the anesthesiologist tried to explain it to me. Says, I usually cannot sleep for 24 to 48 hours after surgery. No matter how hard I try to sleep, I take Vicks NyQuil and all this other, doesn't do anything for me. So I can stay late tonight on the call. I'm tired, but I know that I can't get a wink's worth of sleep and probably till Thursday. So if you want to come back, Charles, and talk in a little bit, hey, sick 'em doggy, you know. So Michael, you got other hands up right now?
Have to unmute first. Yes, I do. I certainly do. Jennifer Sue, how do you do?
I'm good, thank you.
It's good to hear you, girl. You rock. By the way, you are one of the two that I'm currently working on that deed for right now. And I've spent the last 3 days, now it's over 4 days, working on yours and one other person's. Knowing that, what questions you got, girl?
Well, thanks. The person who was helping me buy the house in the first place said title insurance is stupid and you don't really need it, and so I don't really have title insurance on that property. Does that matter?
Yes. It is, and this is the respect. Remember we were just talking with Dr. Goodtime Charlie, and he mm-hmm. asked, and we talked about from the date the title insurance, the contract was made for that insurance, back, that all but clears the board and clears the slate, because that title insurance covers everything previously. So what that means is, and no matter how far forward you go, that insurance covered everything from that date back. And that is a law that they, you know, that they have to stand by. So what happens is that if you had insurance, the reason why it does apply or could apply is that that makes things a lot easier.
Mm-hmm. And also just on the plot of land, there was no lawyers involved and there was no title companies involved.
Now, when you say there was no lawyers involved, are you spelling that L-A-W-Y-E-R or L-I-A-R?
Well, I think it's the same thing, isn't it?
Oh, no, you're bad. My son and some of his friends were baiting and debating the merits of then the differences between this one day after church, between dad jokes and bad jokes. And they got into a heated, you know, event of cussing and discussing that. And all of a sudden it was dead quiet. And my son scratches his head and turns around and looks at me and says, is there a difference? You know, so, by the way, I am going to need to schedule a conference call with you probably, oh gosh, golly gee willikers, sometime late tomorrow or Thursday, so that I can get the rest of the data so I can finish. And you've got there's going to be four documents that you're going to file with them, and it is a package, and that'll be taken care of. Okay.
Okay, thanks. So, Thursday would be better.
Thursday morning. Mr. Edwards, could you pencil us in for a potential Thursday morning, after 10 o'clock Eastern, if at all possible?
Sure, Jennifer Sue, if you just call me 30 minutes before the call, I'll forward a text off to John to get him on point with it, and then you initiate the call at 10 o'clock or whenever it is that you want, okay?
Now, Jennifer Sue, you understand why, you understand multiple reasons why he wants 30 minutes, right? Because if I'm involved, because if I'm involved in another student's work, first, it just confirms the moment, but it gives me a chance to change boats, even though I may be midstream, but and get prepared academically and mentally for your subject matter topic, and rather than the one I may be working on. And because sometimes it's not easy to, you know, all of a sudden get a call. And for everybody else on this call, that's a very, very unbelievably helpful method of operation. If you have an appointment with me or the other information providers, check with Michael Edwards 30 to 60 minutes in advance. That way he gives us a heads up, you know, we can be on deck and prepared for your questions and to help meet your needs. Okay, continuing on, Jennifer Sue.
Totally understandable. So I'll call you at 10 for, well, either 10 to 30 or 11 appointment, whatever is good.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, touch base with Mike at 10 for an 11 o'clock Eastern appointment. Wonderful.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. Thanks. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thanks, Jennifer Sue. Back to you, Michael.
All right. Thank you so very much. Anyone else, press star 2 on your keypad while you're thinking about pressing star 2 on your keypad. I am going to go over and visit Freedoms Radio and see if anyone has posted a question over there. And give me just 1 second. Nope, no questions there that have been raised. Check numbers here. Okay, so.
Okay. We've got a Wisconsin student that he ran into multiple challenges. In fact, there were issues regarding that we thought we had him out of hot water. And I'm going to tell you right now, that particular student, to date, I'm still pro bono on that one, but I am going to, based on the technology that only in the last 2 years, the legalese technology that we and the processing that we did with his with the latest transfers, there was a potential landmine that we just discovered today. And what I'm finding out is that the industry at large, while they may have unconsciously been utilizing this to their own benefit, has not and will not talk about this out loud, because it, like that gentleman that, the California spousal quitclaim deed, and that is a technical term in California law that you talk to a realtor or a real estate attorney or an underwriter or a title company out there and ask them, say, what's a California spousal quitclaim deed? And they'll tell you, because it's community property, he or she or has rights also, and one person cannot make a quitclaim deed for both. So there's all kinds of landmines that we learn about these things. And if you're considering, especially the state of California, and I wish I could say, hey, I've got a great grip on all the landmines you could possibly encounter. That landmine, I only learned about in the last 2.5 years. And that's been out there for a very long time. And there have been unkind citizens with illegal bend on their mind and alternative income opportunities in conspiracy that have been using their spouse as they're playing good cop, bad cop to steal from you, okay? And when you're doing the initial transaction, you have no idea, realize that, you know, you're paying them 10 or 12 or whatever, how many thousand dollars, and they were based, the corresponding reduced value of the note that you were paying some portion of that percentage up front, and the other portion is going to be paid out the back. And it's unless you're schooled in California real estate law, there's no easy way for you to possibly learn about some of that
the California spousal quitclaim deed, or that or any of the other potential landmines. So if you're thinking about transacting a property, there may be some wisdom in how to proceed, you know, and you probably figured out that tonight we just, I wish we had a lot more time because there's so much more that material to cover. So next time you hear about a live call that we're doing property title and its related issues, if you can't make the call, then at least get the recording and listen to it. And then if you have any questions, contact Michael. Back to you, Michael.
All right. Thank you so much. Good time. Charlie's back. He brought his party favors.
But well, does he have a party hat for me?
Come and get it.
Hey, you know, I got an extra taco left over from dinner. Should I fax it to you?
You know. I might need it tomorrow. Yeah. When I initially asked the question, well, you kind of brought it up. I was just curious, and there's so much technicality in what you do that it may not be an example to share. But anyway, you had mentioned that the CRTs are a great benefit. Is there a couple examples of why that is? I mean, apparently there's some stark absences in others that make them vulnerable.
Charlie, that is such a good question. Have you ever had the honor and the privilege of visiting any of Justice Beshear's calls?
Oh yeah.
Okay, good. Okay, then you're primed. Okay, that's fabulous. You've probably got some background on this. One of the things is that when you get the CP-575E as an echo from the Treasury Department, from the IRS, when you file for the EIN for the trust, there's some certain things that that apply very, very well. And here in the jurisdiction where I live, there is a local statute that an entity that certain not-for-profit entities, which the CP-575 is technically de facto evidence that you have a not-for-profit entity, there's certain limitations on litigation and liability that apply. There is a Texas state law that applies that limits liability on some of those transactions and some of those properties. And then the benefit that it reduces the pain and the strain on getting tax abatement or complete tax relief for the property tax, that all of that, the CRT, it's a huge bundle. There's a lot of fabulous things, including the fact that it now terminates the liability that can come to you directly.
Sure. Okay.
That's just the tip of the iceberg.
Okay.
You know.
Yeah.
We can
that
do
much. I can.
Good time, Charlie. We could do a call exclusively on your question, and I would probably run over.
I figured that's probably the case. So those examples I can digest. I've heard them. So thank you.
Yeah. Okay. An honor and privilege. Is there anything else that I can do to be an asset or a blessing for you tonight?
No. Thank you for asking. We so appreciate you being doing these calls and helping us in this area of life that is, it's not many. I certainly have limited understanding of it, so thank you.
Well, Charlie, I'm one person may be like that old story about one's a hand, one's a foot, one's a mouth, one's an eye. I contribute what I can to help Americans restore America. And to that end, it's restoring that liberty that comes from only one place. And however anybody chooses to refer and identify that, I am convinced beyond the shadow of a doubt that there is an intelligent designer out there of this sorry, miserable third rock from the sun that we call planet Earth and home, and that intelligent designer, that entity is out there and he watches over. And whether you call him ET, space aliens, ghost spirits, Paramahansa Yogananda, Allah, Jesus Christ, Yeshua, Yahweh, that's God, that's all way above my pay grade, however anybody chooses to refer to. And that entity is still out there. And that entity says, whatever you've done unto the least these little ones, you've done unto me. So some people talk about their great work for that entity. That serving my fellow person is serving that entity.
Okay. John, before we close out tonight, I'd like you to give our audience this evening a peek into the future plans that we have despoiled for the future enemies of our nation. Whether you beat us to the draw with your, actually, John has people who are Europeans who are serious about heavily investing into a program that John is spearheading. We have the global currency reset that I've been positioned to do a similar type of investment into what we're doing. John, would you like to share your vision for what we're doing after this occurs?
It would be an honor and a privilege. We're working on restoring liberty to America. In reference to an old saying, it says, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. And to that end, with the advent of a lot of these computer software programs and the things that people call apps or applications for full, we're looking at creating a software app that could even be on a phone that we're going to call Legal Assistant or something similar to that. And I've already got into one individual working on coding for the software, and we're looking at putting together a boiler room that we would literally enter into the database every single law that is currently on the books in not just in any individual jurisdiction or the county or the state, but the U.S. and including international treaty law. And it's going to take between 8 and 12 years to complete this task. But the goal is so that whether you get stopped for a traffic ticket like a taillight out or running a stop sign or whatever, or you have somebody that hits you and leaves you damaged and injured, or somebody robs you and or you get arrested for grand theft or whatever, but or not paying taxes, what we're going to do is we're going to have a decision-making tree that shows every aspect of the law that applies and why something is constitutional or is unconstitutional. And we're going to have it in such a way that we show the courts and the jurist what or why that's not constitutional, something that they may have spent a lifetime enforcing. And I've had jurists call me up personally. Two of them, one of them, I worked on her election campaign four times. And Diane called me up and says, John, you shouldn't have been in court why were you in my court today? I says, well, it's very gracious you did not admit that you knew me. But she says, you don't understand. You bought one of those funny plastic cards with you. And one of those little business cards that say, wearing Your Honor, where in the Constitution is exclude my right to keep bear a firearm. And on the back, you know, that lady had the 18 U.S.C. 242 that makes it a felony if I don't rule in her favor. And you don't understand, I got to deal with my husband. He's an avid, you know, he thinks it's wrong to carry a gun and this and that. And she says, and now all the people that I've convicted, she says, I want to let you know that I've already asked my clerk to go get certain cases out of the file, and I'm going to self-overturn some of these convictions. But she said, John, nobody ever posed that question quite that way. And I realized how wrong it was. Diane moved offshore to a non-extradition country. She was so afraid of the, after she got 14 of the convictions overturned, self-overturned, and as I understand it, a certain little organization that they kind of support attorneys from a quiet secret society basically decided that it wasn't worth leaving her alive anymore. And she learned about that. Somebody warned her, and she moved. But the takeaway is that she was a justice for 21 years. And she sat on that district court bench for 21 years. And there was a criminal district position. And she found the truth, and the truth, you know, has changed for a lot of people. While I'd like, my personal ego would like to believe that it may have had something to help contribute to the way Texans view the right to keep and bear a firearm versus a lot of the other states, that method of knowing the truth and the truth setting you free, that's what the software is. And we're talking about the Schedule C budget alone is $7.5 million for the first year, just to get started with the boiler room and this thing. And the second year's budget is $22.5 million. And the Schedule B budget, which is the hardware and the facilities and everything else, is $3.5 million for the first year. And we've got, as Michael said, we're currently, I was tentatively scheduled to go to the Big Apple on Friday of this week, of all days, Valentine's Day, and meet with and make a presentation with this gentleman, his wife, and one of his board members. They all reside, as Michael said, overseas. But their desire is to see liberty restored to America. And so, you know, Michael and I, you know, if I die a pauper, brucheave, as long as my wife and my children are fed and they're taken care of and their property's paid for, I am completely okay with that. As long as I've had a chance to serve my fellow person, I'm completely okay with that. And when I say serve my fellow person, Yeshua said, whatever you've done, the least of the ones you've done unto me. So my attempt to serve Yeshua, the Most High King, that intelligent designer, is serving my fellow person. And right now, Michael is exactly spot on. I am in a brutal dead sprint to the end zone, negotiating right now for a benefactor to help make this idea of putting the power of law, the technology of law, into the hands of the individual person. So if they get stopped for doing 67 and a 65, that they can look at what their options and opportunities are. They can see the difference between a federal citizen and an American national. They can see, and they will know why, and be able to look it up in a decision-making tree instantaneously, so that those of you who have had the honor and the privilege of working with GW, and you've got your status corrected, and that's the term we use, You're not changing your status. Your status has always been the same. Getting it corrected in their computers with a small t, so that they understand that's what's important. And 8 USC 1502, I am working on right now. I found out that the people that we were hoping would be in that office when the gentleman got replaced, he's very terribly unhappy with that. And right now I'm in the process of offering a subpoena to get the records for one of our students obtained literally as we speak. And I'm working on that along with Jennifer Sue and one of our other students' deeds. And correcting and doing this process that we were talking about tonight to protect them and you. And so I'm hoping that shortly, within 3 to 5 years, to have this online so that something about everything that we've learned about the technology of deeds and titles and transferring will all be available to any individual that has the app. And if we can do it so that the app is like $10 or $20, or maybe if we can get funded initially so that maybe we can provide the app for free, then all of these, imagine what that does to how it changes the term judicial reform. Also, imagine what it does to the term legislative reform when they realize that, and I'll use a simple example, when a handful of legislators propose a bill that limits your ability to carry a firearm in a government building or in the U.S. District Court building, those are committing conspiracy under 18 U.S.C. 241, to deprive you of your right to keep, bear a firearm, Your Honor, where in the Constitution does it exclude my right to keep, bear a firearm in that place, let alone your courtroom? You know, and so what that means is that those individuals, and I try not to associate with any political party, regardless of the parties that are out there. I'm not a bipartisan person. I prefer to be known as a nonpartisan person. And if I had ever had a chance to speak, to have a sit down with number 45, who's now number 47, I made that very clear to him. I would have made that very clear to him that I am nonpartisan and that the things that we may do to help out there is nonpartisan. And I don't believe that one party or the other is of the two primary parties, let alone all the individual ones, whether you're a Republican or a Demopub, you know, I don't believe that I don't believe in the party system, or at least put it this way. I'm not certain that that's the wisest way to go, but reckoning an individual's value based on the way they act. So if all of a sudden this legislator does something that's unconstitutional and technically qualifies as conspiracy, even though it takes place during a legislative session, either at the state, the county, the city, or the federal level, U.S. level, it's still conspiracy to deprive you of your rights and subject to criminal prosecution. And as Michael Edwards has enjoyed saying many, many times, saying, under 18 or under 42 USC 1983, taking on the mantle of the prosecutor yourself and seeking damages for you. That's one of our goals. Back to you, Michael.
And I don't want to presume that everybody on this call knows about what I'm about to say here. And if you have something to write with, you may want to grab it real quick right now. To augment what Brother John has, we have already developed. It's in the can. We're operating it very slowly, and we're not attempting to go national with it until after the finances are in line to handle it. Grassfire Communications, www.grassfirecommunications, www.thehumblyprepareshouse.com. And when you look at that, you'll see that we have now enabled people to communicate with one another in unique, specific venues, whether that venue is an entire county or a specific city in that county or a specific voting precinct in that county, enabling these people to communicate with one another anonymously and to the end of taking back the reins of self-government. You add that to what Brother John is putting together, and you have a dynamic that is just outside of reality. The other thing, too, if you keep hearing John or myself talk about correcting your political citizenship status, if you're not certain of what we're talking about, please visit www.AmericanByBirth.com, AmericanByBirth.com. If you'd like to look at an overview of what we're going to be talking about any given evening of the week, then visit www.freedomsradio.com, freedomsradio.com, and there you'll see a calendar with the calls posted and so forth. So, anything else in closing, John?
I think we've had a good and exciting call tonight, and yep. I hope that we've been an asset and a blessing. It's an honor and a privilege to serve every one of you beside Michael and beside you, serve the nation, serve the king by serving the nation and serving you. Thank you, Michael. And thank
you're
all
welcome.
Of you.
Join us tomorrow night, Wednesday night. Wednesday night will be Herr Slevin. Mr. Slevin will be sharing with us a limited liability company, an entity that you operate commercially through and one that is recognized by all the corporations, all the business entities in the world, they recognize a limited liability company, and how this company, by its unique creation, its wrought, is not subject to the federal taxes, the income taxes, state or federal for that matter. So join us tomorrow night for that discussion. Return Thursday night. We will be dealing with either credit card, home foreclosure, or IRS matters. It rotates around. Oh, one other thing, John, before I forget, please.
Yes, sir.
Some of you on the call tonight have been with me so long, you'll remember the name David Merlin. David Merlin. David reached, I haven't talked to him in a decade, over a decade. David reached out to me earlier last week and is opening up about, on one side he's talking the fact that he's fully retired and that he wants to sell his, yeah. Famous last words, I'm retired, right?
They're in the building, he won't leave.
You've heard me use the phrase, quote, offensive litigating strategies, end quote, or, quote, drive-by litigation, end quote. These are not my words. These are David Merlin's words. This is where I learned them from. David has a very unique, very offensive way about him, which I embrace fully because I agree and overkill. There's no such thing as overkill. So it's something to obtain. Anyways, he does this in litigation. He's exhausted. He's tired of this, and he wants to put together some sort of a nest egg. And what I've been talking with him about is he's got this flash drive. I received it yesterday from him. I hope to make a copy of it and share it with Brother John so he can look it over as well. He wants to be hired to teach offensive litigating strategies and the tools that are available to us in law, which you've been hearing us talk about all this time at night. I want to absolutely pull Brother John into this because I don't want to go into any of Brother John's turf. At the same time, though, we all need help. Every one of us need assistance, and that's why we're looking at this investment by these people that don't even live in the United States of America. They don't even live here. outside of our country that are coming, that may be coming in, prayerfully will be coming in, or this global currency reset takes place. So this is just something I want to share with you all. You're probably going to hear me offer, I'll be sending you out a text message saying that joining us on this particular Tuesday night, because I want to do it here with John and David present. I want to get a conversation between John and David before this call takes place. But I want to just give you all a heads up that this is something that I will be doing very, very soon. It's something that's going to benefit us all. And it's something that I hope that will aid and take some of the lift off of what John has been doing with his work as well, take some of that burden. So anyways, that's where we are with that. And that's what I had to say. So hopefully we'll see you tomorrow night with regard to Mr. Slevin, Thursday night regarding the three other issues we talked about, and then, of course, returning Saturday with Justice Bernie Beshears. Until then, good night, everyone, and be well.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted. Thank you.
Thank you.